Okay, we're going to begin our 1 p.m. agenda item with an update on the omnibus amendment. Dave and Michelle. Yeah, all set. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Habitat Omnibus Amendment report today it can be seen best as an update. What we complained about for a long time was that we lost contact with the council on a number of occasions. We want to make sure that doesn't happen again. So this is basically an update and a briefing on the development of the DEIS that's associated with the amendment. So I have nothing further to add, and I'm going to turn it over to Michelle. And she has a presentation. Oh. That's what I thought. I didn't know I could turn it off. Okay. She's going to give a brief presentation on where we stand with the DEIS progress and open it up to questions. And that's the substance of what we're doing today. So go ahead, Michelle.
Okay. Thanks. This will be really brief, and then whatever questions people have, I'm happy to try and answer as best I can. We've basically been working on developing the elements of the document that we identified as still missing at the December meeting. And then the other thing we've been working on is updating analyses to reflect the additional alternatives that were added in December, which mainly is the addition of a reference area in the Stillwagon DHRA alternative, and then the additional options for habitat management alternatives on Georges Bank. And so it takes a bit to sort of reconfigure the economic and fish and seabed data to go into those write-ups for those alternatives. But that is all done. And basically we're sort of at the stage of finishing this week, really writing up a lot of the impacts. I'm hoping to have the habitat impacts drafted. We're well on our way to having the rest of the economic impacts drafted and really sort of pulling together some concluding statements about hopefully net costs or benefits of the different alternatives so you can compare amongst them. And Andy's in the process of working on updating all the groundfish analyses to reflect the additional alternatives that were added. So we've got a lot of the writing underway. The other thing that we've made a lot of progress on recently is impacts on other fisheries, particularly the mid-Atlantic fisheries and, you know, other non-groundfish fisheries. You saw a lot of the scallop-related analyses in December, but we've sort of done similar work for most of the other fisheries in the region, and we're working on that this week and next week. And then really what we'll be focusing on in February is just making sure that the document's internally consistent and that we can provide, you know, some sort of synthesis of the impacts analysis and some high-level summary statements to help you understand as you make decisions at the end of next month. So, yeah, that's pretty much where we're at. I'm, you know, feeling pretty good that we're going to have a lot more information and sort of pulled together and, you know, more sort of coherent synopsis of the results of the impacts analysis so that can be considered when we meet again next month. And if people have questions about specific alternatives and what they mean or analyses, whether we're doing them or anything like that, I'd be happy to take those.
Yeah, thank you, Michelle, for your brief report. And I do want to thank all the council members for rearranging your schedules for this special meeting on the 25th and 26th of February. Unfortunately, Mike won't be able to join us, but he will be in a far more fun place. David and Terry.
Yeah, Michelle, in our binder, we have, or on our disk, depending upon whether you have paper or disk, there's a PowerPoint presentation from the Stillwagon Bank Sanctuary, and there is reference to analyses that they have done to assist us with our decisions relative to the reference area in the DHRA, the Stillwagon DHRA. Will there be any staff or plan development team review of that analysis? So we will know whether or not their conclusions are good ones. I assume they are, but they provide information that is extremely useful And I think we all need to make sure that their analysis and conclusions are supported by staff and the plan development team. So what will happen with this analysis?
So we actually were scheduled to have a RECS advisory panel meeting last week, I think, that got canceled due to the snow, and so we actually spent a bit of time, Garrett and I, working through what he was going to do in terms of economic impacts analysis of the reference area, and provided a draft as part of the documents for that meeting. And so he had worked pretty closely with the analyst who was doing that work on behalf of the sanctuary to try and figure out if what had been done was consistent, if they were using the same data, sort of making the same assumptions and having the same understanding. And so I think sort of what Garrett was doing sort of independently but coordinated with what they were doing alongside of the sanctuary's own work is, in fact, very consistent with the results. I'm not sure that Garrett would characterize all of their conclusions in the exact same way or with this quite the same slant, but the data are the same as what you'll see in the write-up we provide for the DEIS. So I think we're sort of coordinating with them, and we'll continue to coordinate with them if the need for follow-up arises.
Okay, so we will have that information before our next meeting. Very good, since we will have to contend with a great deal of correspondence and objection to the reference area, any reference area, or any one of the options. And the strength of those arguments made by recreational fishermen regarding those options, that's the strength of those arguments could be greatly diminished if indeed the Selwagen Bank Sanctuary's conclusions are correct. So I'm glad you're on top of that. Thank you.
Terry.
I have a question about the DHRAs, Michelle. So in the DEIS, it says Amen Rock is a special case. What does that mean? And will it be more restrictive, such as no lobster gear, wreck fishing, no wreck fishing, you know, change of anchors in the habitat? Is that what you meant by a special case there?
So the Amen Rock area is actually one of the habitat management areas. It's not actually called out as a potential DHR research area. But in any case, you're correct that it was sort of singled out as being deserving of additional protection. And so the way it's written up is that it would be closed to all fishing gears and activities except for lobster trapping. And that exception was sort of based on some discussions we'd had that, you know, generally the councils don't manage lobster trapping. We've gotten some guidance that Moira could probably explain a little bit better than I could, and that basically boils down to if management of lobster gear is needed to sort of ensure rebuilding, I think, or conservation of a stock, then the council could undertake that in collaboration with ASMFC. So we haven't really particularly reached out to ASMFC in terms of those kind of measures. I mean, that definitely is a type of gear that's used in that area. And it was only ever designed as being a specially managed subset of the Caches Ledge area, which would be managed as potentially like a mobile gear closure or something like that.
Terry. So the other DHRA areas, like the one in the Great South Channel and the one, are we calling the one down east McDoherty? Are we calling that a DHRA, or what are we calling that?
So the eastern Maine area, there's, as a habitat management area, that would be sort of a longer-term area designed for minimizing adverse effects. There's a small version, and then there's the larger version that was developed back in May, I think. And then the smaller one is also potentially a DHRA. So you could do an additional designation of that as a DHRA. The measures might very well be the same. The DHRA would be specified as a mobile bottom tending gear closure. The habitat management area could also exempt clam dredges, or it could just have the gear modification option. So, but as a DHRA, it would be a mobile gear closure and then potentially have a sunset after the three-year period.
Terry, you're on a roll.
Sorry. Okay, so when do we – who makes the rules for those DHRAs, and does the council have input on the rules for those DHRAs? And when – so we're trying to put that in as a preferred option. If we're trying to put that in as a preferred option, I'm just kind of curious how we put that in with when we don't know what's going to be taking place in that DHRA, such as are they going to still be able to hook fish in there? Are they going to be able to lobster fish? What?
Excuse me. So the overall regulations as going with the DHRA would be that you could still use hooks, you could still use lobster traps. What would be prohibited as a blanket prohibition would be mobile bottom tending gears, and that's to sort of create the background conditions where the habitat's more undisturbed and you can do specific research. And then within that area, studies that are sort of consistent with the research agenda that is outlined in the document could be undertaken. And some of those might, you know, in local subsets, treatment areas, be mobile gear use studies to see how that compares to unfished with mobile gear areas outside the treatment area. And so those, the treatment design would really be specified by the folks that are doing the research. And we haven't exactly figured out, I mean, you can definitely do those, you know, to some extent you can just do research without needing any kind of special authority from the regional office. In this case, because if you were doing mobile gear use research, it would be, it would need an exemption from the overall restriction. It would require probably a letter of authorization. But that would be a process that they would administer in terms of identifying if folks want to go into those areas and do research involving prohibited mobile gears. And the thinking, one of the ideas behind designating DHRAs is it sort of identifies the area ahead of time. We've already looked at potential for impacts. You know, we know hopefully what kind of research we're hoping that people will do and the kind of questions they'll hopefully answer, and it should make it a little easier for people to get those letters of authorization to do that type of research. That's kind of a comment we've gotten throughout the process, is that people have had trouble getting the authorization to do those types of research activities in habitat management areas in the past, so part of the idea is to sort of facilitate that and not really pre-approve, but at least sort of help that process along and help it go a little faster.
Other questions? Mike, I see Maggie.
Yes. Obviously, this is one of the tougher issues that we'll have to decide on, or the council will have to decide on when I'm enjoying the sun in the Turks and Caicos, because but anyway, This is one of the issues that concerned me, so I'm glad that David raised it. And it is very useful to have a document from the people at the Sanctuaries Program outlining effectively what some of the costs to the industry would be of foregoing access to this particular area. I agree with his view that it would be valuable to have the PDT make some comments on whether they agree with the analyses or not. I have no reason to question it one way or the other. But I think in this decision we have to consider both sides of the question. One is, what are the impacts of foregone opportunity to fish in this area? And the other is concerns the research that's to be done. The document describes the purpose, the essential purpose of the proposed reference area is to allow valuable assessments of the role that groundfish removals play in mediating habitat recovery and how that affects the productivity of managed species. As a general statement, that sounds very nice. But as somebody who spent a big chunk of my life reviewing research and evaluating it and seeing it some succeed and some fail, I think that there needs to be some pretty careful consideration as to whether in fact, this is a priority, how likely it is to succeed, and whether, in fact, it's essential that it be done, or not essential, whether the foregone opportunity to fish justifies it being done in this area. So I'm now, this may have all been discussed by the PDT at one time or another, and being a relative newcomer to it, I don't want to second guess or reopen things that have already been addressed. But I do raise this as the sort of question I would be asking about, is it, whatever that foregone opportunity to fish is it worth it in terms of the likely benefits that will come out of the proposed studies or the opportunity to conduct these studies? Thank you.
Other comments, questions from the council? David.
It occurred to me after continuing through the habitat section in these documents before us that there's one issue that will take up a bit of our time when we discuss SARA, the reference area specifically. And my question is, will we have, before or at our council meeting, any information from the groundfish plan development team, from the habitat plan development team, from whomever, any information that will enable us to judge the merits of the claim made by many party and charter boat fishermen in written form, emails, we have them all, the claim that they now are very dependent on that area, the research area, the reserve area. They're very dependent upon that area because, and I'll just quote one sentence from document number 3 in the habitat section, where it says, as it is, in the last 2 years, we have added 7 to 10 miles each way to compensate for the lack of fish on the western edge of the bank since catch share management opened that area to the large draggers that just hammer the area all winter and spring. And then it goes on from there. So will we have any information that will enable us to judge the merits of that particular claim, that indeed that this area has taken on new importance because of the effort of sector vessels fishing without trip limits, without possession limits, as they may, because they can, on the western boundary, so that there's a lack of fish. This is a tough one to evaluate, I know, but it's going to weigh heavily on the minds of, I think, some of us, if not many of us, as to whether or not the reference area should be adopted. That's a consideration, along with the consideration that Dr. Sissonwine mentioned regarding the nature of the research and whether, if it's successful, the benefits of that research will outweigh the cost of lost opportunity. So that's my question. Will we have any additional information enabling us to evaluate the merits of this consistent claim made by the charter boats?
Michelle?
So I'm actually looking right now. You can take a look at the draft analyses that we put together as part of the materials for the RAP meeting, and I'd be happy to hear if you think that there are things that we should try and include that we haven't. But to the extent possible, we're trying to look at it at an individual level and also in terms of, you know, an individual's revenue derived from the reference area as compared to sort of overall for them, to put it in that perspective. I think the conclusion of the analysis was that there's a relatively small number of folks that actually use this area, but there are some that do that are heavily dependent on it. So I think that does ring true with some of the comments that have been received in terms of dependence and direct effect. The analysis that we put together so far looks at the last 2012, 2011, and 2010 recreational data. If you think it would be useful to go back sort of beyond further back than that to look at maybe longer-term trends, that's probably something we could do before the February meeting. But in general, the approach was to sort of take look at, you know, how much effort is in those areas, compare it to what the same vessels, and he did it in terms of small groups of vessels for confidentiality reasons, what those small groups have in terms of revenue overall and maybe where else they're fishing. And so I think we should be getting, hopefully, at the kind of questions you're asking, but please take a look at what we prepared for the RAP meeting, and I'd love to hear if you have any comments specifically.
Other questions from the council? Terry.
Yeah, I'd like to go back to the Amen Rock area. John Quinn made a motion last summer to analyze all the areas with no closures in any of them as a metric to measure. And I think that's caused a lot of I don't know how you want to phrase it, misinterpretation of what we're actually trying to do here. I mean, is it your impression that opening up Amen Rock has ever been on the table? Are you taking it that way? And if you are, or if the general public is, then I think that we as council need to make it perfectly clear to the general public that, as far as I'm concerned, Amen Rock has not been on the table, and I think there's a lot of misinformation out there being circulated around saying that it is, and I'm sure John Quinn could speak to the intent of his motion was at that point.
Tom, then John.
So, if I might ask Michelle a question or two here. My understanding is we have some alternatives in each area that eliminate all closures, which is based on, I think, the council motion you're referring to. So, yes, there are alternatives in there in the document that would not have any spatial management alternatives for habitat reasons, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
That doesn't mean you have to select that alternative right down the road, but that is there are alternatives like
right.
that.
I mean, I suppose if it was more consistent with the council's intent, you could, in the central Gulf of Maine region, adjust that so it was no habitat management areas except for Amen Rock. But the way it's currently drafted is that there would be no habitat management areas whatsoever in that region. And that's how it's been written up that way probably since the fall of last year.
Terry?
I don't think we want to do that today. So, I mean, that would open up a lot of stuff that you've already completed, all that work that you've done. But, I mean, I don't know, maybe a consensus statement that nobody...
Thank you for not having to rule you out of order. I mean, that's the purpose of going to public comment, and it's something that the Habitat Committee and Council can reflect upon. When we deal with the final measures. But I think I'm going to turn to John for clarification on his intent.
I just want to make sure the record reflects correctly what had happened. Was that was the Portland meeting, and it was something that I discussed, but it ultimately turned into a Chairman Preble as the lead sponsor, and I was second on it, number one. Number two, I think that it was for analysis only, and the discussion was built around the fact that we have a whole different regime of management now of effort control and everything else, so it's a much different thing. So it was merely for analysis, and I'll give the credit to Chairman Preble for filing that motion.
Chairman Preble.
Yes. In fact, John Quinn is correct on both counts. It was never intended to be an option for management. It was intended for analysis only, and it was presented in that light.
Okay. Maggie?
Thank you, Terry. Maggie Raymond, Associated Fisheries of Maine. I just have a couple of follow-up questions to questions that have already been asked. And one is just... for clarification, there are no options in this document that would restrict lobster gear in any of the potential habitat management areas. Yes, sir.
That's correct.
Okay, so even on Amen Rock, where we've heard that this is some kind of really marvelously special place, I think maybe the council might want to reconsider that, but we'll certainly include that in our public comments on the amendment. Second question is with respect to the DHRAs. If the council adopts, there are three potential DHRAs, and if the council adopts any or all of those, on day one of implementation, there is no mobile gear fishing in those areas. And I understand that the council is going to expect researchers to submit proposals that meet the objectives of those DHRAs that you have outlined. But to date, we have not, with the exception of a proposal for Stellwagen Bank, we have not received any kind of plans from researchers saying specifically what they would do in those areas, how long the experimentation would take, and so forth. So my question is, the council is basically being asked to close some very large areas to all bottom-tending mobile gear on the hope that someone will come forward with a research plan, but no research plans except for Stellwagen have been submitted to date.
Yeah, I mean, that's accurate. I think that is really the rationale for the sunset provision, so that they don't end up having that mobile gear closure status. And something we'll hopefully be able to provide with the DEIS is a sense for, I mean, two of those three areas don't have that type of fishing in it currently. The eastern Maine area does, but that area, from what we've done so far, isn't heavily fished by mobile gears. So it's sort of difficult to assess the potential for using mobile gears in the areas that have been closed. But, you know, I think getting to something that I believe it was Dr. Sissonwine said earlier, the intent of the document will be to sort of help you understand what the benefits might be of designating these areas for this purpose versus the economic costs. And it's really going to be a call of, is it worth it? What the PDT has mostly worked on in the past is, well, what would the benefits be? And we haven't had that cost information. And so now I think we will and can have that trade-off discussed openly.
If I could. So theoretically, someone could come in 2 years after the DHRA has been put in place and say, okay, here's my plan, and now I need 5 years to do it, and then that's when we would know what the, I mean, I think the council needs to think about this. You know, first of all, if there's no mobile gear fishing in an area that's going to close, what are you going to study about mobile gear in that area? I mean, there's a lot of questions about these DHRAs, and I hope that the council thinks through them clearly before you vote for them. And lastly, and thank you again for the amount of time, but there's an enormous amount of decisions that need to be made in this amendment, and the written material is enormous in its weight and a number of pages, and I know you scheduled this special meeting in February to pick preferred alternatives. I hope, and I know the staff is very busy and is working very hard to get this done, but we need to get this information out to the public well before that meeting so that we have the opportunity to digest it, because it is, just look at it whenever I have a chance, and I always find a surprise, just because there's so much in this, so I ask that you, you know, make your best effort to do that. Thank you.
Rich.
Hi, Rich Ruay, American Bluefin Tuna Association. I really appreciated David's questions about what kind of impact the reference area is specifically going to have on the charter boats in particular that use that area. And I think that if all you're relying on right now is either a couple of letters or the recreational survey data, I'd suggest that you don't really have the full scope of what's going on. A lot of those charter boats that work that area are also tuna fishermen, and I hear from them a lot, and I'm not the best person to describe exactly how many boats are, but I can tell you they include boats from Gloucester to Green Harbor to Scituate to Plymouth and all the way around the Cape from there, and the area is extremely important to them, and I think it's also more of a recent phenomenon, so I don't think the survey information or even logbooks are going to be catching that yet. I think what needs to be done is to go to the Stellwagen Bank Charter Association and any other organized groups that work that area and tell you exactly how much from their logbooks they would be impacted if you did shut that area off to them. So thanks very much.
Okay, I do want to keep this focused on questions. Ron, Patrick, and then Mike. Oh, Ron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Smallwoods, Fishery Survival Fund. I have a question. It's something I've brought up time and time again over the years, and now that we're getting close to the public hearing document, is there a simple table that's going to be available to the public that identifies each area and what the purpose of that area is from a habitat perspective? Something very simple. So in other words, if there's an area, call it A, is it being considered a habitat area because it contains rocks, because it contains vertical epifauna, because it contains a year-round population of large spawning size codfish, or that it's a juvenile nursery area for yellowtail? In other words, is there going to be a very simple table that gives the purpose of each habitat management area? Because we're involved in this intimately, we get lost in the details. We start arguing all the details, and we lose track of why some of these areas are being proposed. And I think the public needs to know, or else you're going to get a lot of allocation battles. Guys are going to say, oh, I want to keep the mobile gear out of there because I could be gill nets. Well, if the area is being closed to protect large codfish, you know, recreational fishermen and gill net fishermen need to understand that they probably will not be in that area. So we need the purpose defined in the document in a very simple upfront handout. Are we going to have something like that? I've been bringing this up, you know, time and time again.
Michelle?
I think that's a good idea. It's not a table I've developed yet, but that's something we can do.
Thank you much. I'm glad we're getting close to the end. By the way, we do have a research project in the DHRA since last June on closed area one. We dumped about 300,000 scallops in an area. We've been watching them closely. They're doing fine. And there's more to habitat research than just gear impacts.
Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Patrick Paquette, recreational fishing advocate from Massachusetts and a member of the recreational advisory panel. I just wanted to ask or caution the council to don't assume what's going to come out of this coming RAP meeting. It's unfortunate that there's not going to be a lot of time between the RAP meeting and the February council meeting. But just don't assume it. The RAP is definitely been discussing this ahead of time, and we're concerned about much more than the DHRA, and we're concerned about how some options interact with other options. And it's not just all about, geez, we're just concerned with this one little closed area. The fleet is bigger than that, and we're very concerned with the overall purpose of this amendment, and there's going to be significant discussion at that meeting to understand how these alternatives fit together so that we can inform you as you go through your decisions, selecting preferred alternatives. So please don't – it's just sometimes when I hear it, it's like I understand where a lot of our comment thus far has been, but it's also because that's one of the easiest options to understand, and I'm going to agree with Maggie and those before me. today who have said that the public doesn't have a really good understanding of it. And, I mean, I come to these meetings and come to most of them, and I'm really confused by what one selection of one alternative triggers another one. And there is other concerns amongst our fleet that we want to understand so that we can do our job that you're going to have. So just please don't assume that there's something coming from. And so when I had the one question, Terry, and I'll get out of your way, I want to make sure that I'm understanding this one question. There is no area in this document that's closed to lobster fishing, correct? So there's no area that's pure in this document. Somebody, some gear is fishing in every area. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Additional questions for Michelle? Mike?
Yeah, I had another area that I'm confused about and want to make sure I understand it better, and that is the options that are being considered for the northern part of Georges Bank. In our council meeting, the last council meeting, whenever it was, we discussed the northern edge option that covered what is has been habitat of particular concern, but also the possibility of a corridor along the Hague line. And so I want to know, my question is right now, is where are we in terms of the things that are being analyzed with respect to the northern part of Georges Bank? And then I might have a follow-up comment depending on that answer.
Thank sure. So we've developed two different areas, one that is the larger version and one that has that buffer corridor along the Hague line. From a fish perspective, we're looking at which species have hotspots in there, which species are generally distributed in that area. Definitely a focus on groundfish of interest, particularly juvenile groundfish that have an affinity for structured habitats like cod or haddock. From the sort of habitat side, looking at the distribution of different sediment types in the area, where those data come from, sort of the level of resolution of the data, what the SASE model tells us about potential vulnerability of the area, how to compare that across the different alternatives. So those are really the kind of things that we're focusing on. And then in addition, any other literature information we can bring in about how that area has changed over time since it's, because it has been closed, we'll try and incorporate in the write-up as well.
Mike.
Okay, thank you on that. I'm glad you are analyzing it both with and without the so-called corridor. As I think my reaction might have been similar to a lot of council members, that when the idea of the corridor came up, it initially seemed like a reasonable idea until you, I think, actually presented a graph that indicated the size of it and how much of the habitat of particular concern it actually covered. So I do think it's important that we consider that very carefully, and frankly, given the magnitude of that area, I do have concerns about it. I think it would be useful for council members to actually have a bit clearer understanding of from the industry's perspective, why that corridor is actually specifically so helpful and why it needs to be 10 miles versus something else. From the habitat perspective, it might be interesting to consider if it is, in fact, very important to have it, whether there is any compensation that might be achieved in terms of habitat by extending in to the west or something of that nature. In any case, I since I won't be at the meeting, and I do regret that I'm not going to be at it, in spite of that I will be having a good time in the sun, but seriously, I would like to be able to participate in the debate. I did want to get on the table at this stage the two issues I've raised. One of them is the importance of the corridor, the impact it has on habitat on the northern edge, and the other would be the sort of the what I would call the cost benefit of the habitat area designated for research in terms of displacement of fishing opportunity relative to the potential research, likelihood of that research being successful, and what alternative ways there might be to get the same information. So thank you.
Any further questions for Michelle? Seeing none, thanks, Michelle, and good luck pulling it all together. Dave.
Yeah, just a last couple of quick comments. By the way, John Quinn did second that motion, by the way.
It was your idea, though.
Okay. It is very unfortunate that the snowstorm interfered with the RAP meeting, and I do expect a great deal to be coming out of it, and I really do wish that it had turned out that we had that information earlier. And I understand the angst that that produces. And we will get as much lead time on the material as possible. And the last thing I wanted to just briefly mention was the issue of the lobsters. Lobster gear has an effect on the habitat. There's no question it has some effect. But we don't manage it. And we discussed that at some length at council meetings, and this is going back now the years that this has been in effect, or going on, rather. And it was decided that it would not be addressed at this particular amendment. And the last thing is that I think we need to remember is that this amendment is going to, at the last meeting I said that I thought that it might rival the size of the Affordable Care Act. It now appears it is going to actually dwarf the size of the Affordable Care Act. So in other words, it's an extremely complex an extremely large undertaking, and I don't know because I haven't been around for the entire time that the council was in existence, but I think there's a very good chance that it's the most complex piece of work that the council has done. And I just wanted to pass along something that a fisherman said to me a couple of months ago when I told him that we tried at every stage to try to simplify it, and he said, I don't know how you could. It's not simple material. There's nothing simple about it. So it's complicated. And he said, you shouldn't try to sugarcoat that. It's a complicated issue. Then I ran across a quote from H.L. Mencken, and I'll just very quick, I'll read it. It says, for every complex problem, there is an answer that is clear, simple, and wrong.
That being said, we're transitioning on to monkfish. We need a couple minutes for Kate to get set up.
Oh, no. I'm going to take this.